Blog Talk Radio.
Live edition of Carson's Corner, the MMA version. My name is Bob Carson. We're live here on Blog Talk Radio. 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. We also have the chat room open for you as well. We're very excited about tonight's show because we're going to be welcoming back to the show Wes Sims. Okay, Wes has been a real friend of the program. Okay. He's really, really a good guy, and I got an opportunity to speak to him yesterday, and we wanted to have him on the show because there was some guy named Jack Brown who did an interview with him on the Underground, and it wasn't as good as the interviews you're used to hearing here on Carson's Corner. And so we decided to reach out to Wes and try to get him on the show. He agreed. And then, coming up in the second hour, or actually the next hour, we will be speaking with Dan Quinn. Actually, we already spoke to Dan on the 5th, and we got an update from Dan. Dan was just very, very good. I mean, he was in high spirits and everything. The trial is going to be set for another couple weeks, several weeks, actually, according to his mother, Joan Quinn. And, it was great to hear Dan. Dan actually started crying. I kid you not, folks. You will hear Dan actually shed some tears in his latest update here on Carson's Corner. I'm going to try to reach out to Wes now, so just bear with me here. He's stealing cars right now. And
we're going to try to get him on. You have reached the voicemail box of 7408086067.
Hey, Wes, Bob Carson here. If you get this message, please give me a call. We're broadcasting live. It's 347-326-9749, my friend. Thank you. All right, so we're going to wait for Wes to call in here. He will call. He's always been reliable. I have no reason to doubt that Wes is going to call in. But before we do, let's talk about some of the issues we've got going on in MMA here. And I want to talk about the recent scoring issues we've seen, because these issues really have come to light, especially after the last UFC pay-per-view, okay, which it was a disastrous card. I mean, I'm glad I didn't plop down. I think they raised the prices up to $60 now. It's just ridiculous. But with the Phil Davis, Lyoto Machida fight, there was some controversy surrounding that decision. And I just got to tell you, as flawed as a lot of the MMA scoring has been, at least when UFC fights were decided by Top Control, we knew what to expect. I mean, you could just get a takedown, you could stall, you could sit on top, and you'd win automatically afterwards. And I'm not saying I love that era of the sport or the philosophy behind that scoring, but at least it was consistent. Now we have judges who basically have thrown that concept out in favor of arbitrarily deciding who wins and who loses each round. And I blame Dana White for this, at least partially. I know he was very publicly in favor of the decision of the fight against Luke Barnett versus Dylan Andrews on The Ultimate Fighter. And, the first two rounds, I mean, it was going to cause some confusion after Dana came out in favor of that decision. But it's how else do you explain some of the crazily inconsistent judging we've seen recently? Just, it doesn't make any sense. And, now, I'll give you some examples. Julie Kedzie, in her last fight, She did way more to win than Jorge Masvidal did versus Tim Means. I mean, the problem in MMA has always been the subjectivity of the rules. Okay, it isn't the 10-point must system. We don't need half points for the referee to pick a winner using flags. I mean, what we need are clear rules that determine what the important factors are in terms of who wins rounds. And, you know, what's to say that this technique is worth more than that technique? You know, the rules are subject to subjectivity. And, you know, the judges are free to ignore takedowns instead of favoring them. This leads to the judges basically perceiving who the better fighter is or who the better, higher-ranked fighter is. And, you know, without clear rules, I think it's human nature for perceptions of a fighter. And judges are humans. I mean, let's be honest here. It's human nature for them to use their perceptions of a fighter as the deciding factor when an exchange or a round is hard to score. And if we encourage draws, it might mitigate that some. The athletic commissions openly discourage scoring fights a draw or using a 10-8 round, although the latter is more common. So we end up with judges who like certain fighters, usually those on the longest streak, and when they don't know who won a round or part of it, they just go with the person they perceive to be better. And we've seen this over and over again. Okay, bad decisions almost universally favor the more highly ranked fighter. And don't get me started on the judging in Brazil. I mean, I actually agreed with the judging in the Davis versus Machida fight. Basically, Lyoto literally, you know, did the least he possibly could do every round. And the fact that his strikes are called significant is misleading. What is a significant strike? I mean, all significant strike means is that the punch wasn't considered to be a jab with the fighter's lead hand. We've seen people get knocked down and knocked out by jabs many times. Jabs can be significant. I mean, you see what I'm saying here? It's what's to say a jab is any less effective than a lip wrist hook or whatever? You know, significant strikes is a misnomer. I thought that Davis did enough to win. I thought, he kept it close on his feet and stalled the first two rounds because he hit those takedowns and got some ground control in. And those crying about the decision need to remember that Lyoto, his only real flurry was blocked or avoided. And he did really no damage to Davis and got outstruck overall and taken down twice. And, you know, somebody posted on the Underground, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You know, Lyoto has won many controversial decisions. And he won, he's lost this one. So it was still a very close fight. Don't get me wrong, okay? But then, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Nothing surprises me when it comes to the judges anymore, especially how the UFC imported mostly non-Brazilian judges. That was a huge factor in the event and the way the fights are scored. Behind the scenes, MMA gamblers are scrambling, trying to bet on account of this new info. It did work out for a lot of people. Some people got burned on that Davis fight, especially the Broche-Malesh fight, huh? We were going to try to get Elvis Sinisek on. Actually, Elvis agreed to be on the show. He's in Australia, and so he's about maybe 15 hours ahead of us. Oh, we got Wes on the phone right now. Wes, are you there?
I'm here.
Wes? Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, man, how are you doing?
No, you've been sitting here boring me to death about that decision. I don't want to hear about that no more.
Well, now the excitement is here. You know, we've got the excitement of the show here today.
What do you want to talk about today, Bob?
I want to talk about a lot of things here. We featured you here on the show several times. It's been a while since we last spoke, but it feels like you've been very active recently as an MMA personality and statesman.
Well, our sport needs some personalities, not some guys that are sitting behind a podium having their shit wrote up for them. I'm talking about originality.
So this was a conscious choice on the part of the project. I mean, do you have extra free time right now, or are you just transitioning into a new role as kind of a fighter?
No. I'm training. I've got a fight coming up, and got some things slowed down in my life. And I mean, yeah, I'm just, you know, I've got the youths to fight, and got some good years here ahead of me. Feeling pretty good. Couple injuries, but feeling pretty good and ready to go.
Wes Sims, the fighter and finalist. That's the way I see it. Your integrity hasn't been compromised by taking a paycheck from a company that wants to toe the line or wants you to toe the line. You're free to speak your mind and tell it like it is, and we really appreciate that. So what does the free-thinking, free-willing Wes Sims think of the current state of MMA?
I mean, you know, the sport's grown. It's huge. I mean, new fans every day, and people, I mean, the new guys, they just know what you see on The Ultimate Fighter. That's what they know, or the new Bellator. And, you know, you were talking about those judges here when I first called in. I was listening to that. And, you know, I personally think that to be a licensed judge, you've got to know. I mean, it's like, you know, boxing judges knew boxing. And I'm really new boxing. I mean, sure, it got kind of cloudy there and towards the end where you knew who won the fight, yet they'd give it to the other guy. But I think the judges for MMA, you can't just take boxing judges and put them over to MMA and say, oh, they know MMA. I think they should have to take a course in. And I know they're doing these courses, but I mean, I'm talking, they need to, you need to be able to rattle off a UFC 6, who won this fight, and what is your take on it? And see how they judge some of the old school fights. I think it would transition better now, even though, yeah, the rules have changed. But I think them taking in the sport as a whole, I think you'll see better decision making.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I know that there have been programs, especially with some referees. And, I mean, even some referees, you look at a guy like Dan Mirigliotta. Dan Mirigliotta, you know, knows the sport. He was a promoter. He's a Bart Bell certified shoot fighting instructor. And he gets criticized all the time for making bad stops. In fact, you know, I think if you poll the majority,
I'll never criticize Big Dan. I think he's made some very good calls. He's human. He breathes, and he's human. He's going to make mistakes in there. No one's perfect. No one's made perfect call every single time. There's no judge or referee that's ever made the perfect decision and call every single time. He's made mistakes, but I think he's one of the best the UFC has.
You know, and recently Dana White just blasted Steve Mazzagatti. I mean, I listened to it, and it was just unbelievable the way that he was going after Steve Mazzagatti. And so I guess Dana White's not a big fan of Steve Mazzagatti.
Well, Mazzagatti's the same thing, though. You know, I mean, you never hear after a really good championship fight or just a really good fight period, you never hear anyone say, oh, my God, that was a great referee job. That was a great – after Weidman knocked out Anderson Silva, they didn't say, oh, my God, that was a great referee job there. No one talked about the referee. But as soon as the referee makes a mistake and does something that is questionable, oh, my God, they should be fired. They should be on unemployment. I mean, referees, they get a bad rap.
That's true. I definitely
And that's coming
with that.
From me. That's coming from the whole show here, Carson.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's
And Wes Sims and the referees have the very few times we've ever really gotten along.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we could go back many fights over your career and look at some questionable decisions. Has the state of MMA, has it peaked, in your opinion? I mean, or are we seeing a cooling off period for the sport as a whole?
Well, I think, I definitely think, I don't know if it's peaked, but I think, you know, with cable prices shooting up to $60 a pay-per-view, and there's so many fight cards now. I mean, you've got a fight card every 2 weeks. You can watch it for free on Fox, or you can wait
by the pay-per-view, which, you know, I mean, I'm not criticizing UFC by any stretch, but, man, you can't take and throw, you can't have, what six or five or six prelim fights that you're going to turn around and use in the pay-per-view as fillers. People's already seen them on FX or wherever, you know? And you pay $60 and you're watching the same fight that you watched earlier the night. It's going to aggravate some people.
And I'm getting reports that even the pay-per-views now are being saddled with commercials, which is just unbelievable. I mean, I can't confirm that one way or other, but a lot of people are telling me that now, you know, there's just as much commercials on the pay-per-views as there are, you know, on the televised
broadcast. Yeah, I mean, I guess you see commercials if advertisements for their products or their other sister companies. I mean, yeah, I mean, they do have them in there. I mean, it's a lot more than what it was, but I think you're going to find that in everything. You find that in any kind of pay-per-view, any WWE or whatever, boxing. I mean, they're all littered with sponsorships or advertisements.
What about fighter pay? I know you come from an era where fighter pay was probably just enough not to starve for a person of your size, so you may have a perspective on this from some active fighters, but as someone with experience fighting many times overseas as well as in a wide range of shows, including some less professional and organized promotions, you must have seen wildly various paychecks in your career.
I've seen big ones and I've seen small ones. And, you know, you want the big one, it's all on you. I mean, it's how hard you want to work, how hard do you want to win, how hard do you want a big paycheck. And that's really what it boils down to. I mean, guys are out there busting their balls and shooting for that submission or shooting for that knockout and getting that. I mean, I'm still trying to plead to get my fight of the night from UFC 46. I definitely feel like I deserve something from UFC 43.
Right. That was that was.
You don't sound as enthusiastic about it as I do, Carson.
Well, you know, it's different for me. I mean, I'm trying to even remember. That was versus Mir, right?
Well, yeah. I think me and him saved UFC 46. That was when Randy got poked in the eye. So that main event didn't live up to its hype, and I think the best fight on the card, besides the BJ and Matt Hughes, was me and Mir. So I'm petitioning, hoping that they send a little fight bonus my way.
They didn't have bonuses back then, did they?
I know that. But they're getting paid now, so I'm hoping they're going to send something for back then.
I know. I wasn't sure about that because, you know, that was But I was
no
so. So basically, you just got paid a flat fee and that was it. I mean, you know, and now bonus pay is good and everything, but I don't know. I just feel that these fighters are undercompensated. As a whole, and
I mean, like I said, I mean, the only other thing that they could do that would be fair would be if the guys got some kind of percent or points on merchandising, where they put out a shirt, Anderson Silva shirt, and they just sell. I mean, that's how the WWE does it. I mean, these guys are getting checks, royalty checks for the things that sell. If you're popular, you go out there and you fight, and people want to see you fight, you're going to get paid. If you go out there and you hold a guy down and try to dry hump him, no one wants to watch that. I think Dana's made that argument and said that before. I mean, no one wants – if you're boring, no one wants to see you fight. So you're lucky they even still have you on the cards.
Yeah, and you look at someone like Ben Askren, who just came to an end with Bellator on his contract, and nobody knows what's going on. I mean, if he's going to re-sign with Bellator or what, because he's a guy who doesn't care that he has boring fights, you know? Even though he's finished his last two opponents, but, you know, by and large, he doesn't care when the fans boo. He actually seems to like it. And I don't know. Like, would he be a good mix in the UFC? Who knows?
I don't know. He's boring. I don't think people want to see it. Regardless if he's undefeated, if he goes out there and just holds the guy down, no one wants to watch that.
Yeah. I want to talk about your experiences in Japan and elsewhere. I know you've been discussing the potential outline of a book about your experiences on the global fighting circuit. You've hinted that there are many outrageous revelations which you could reveal during the course of such a book. I got to tell you, Wes, this is something which has frustrated me as an MMA fan for years. I mean, so many crazy things going behind the scenes, but the MMA media is scared to talk about it. Fighters themselves are worried about burning their bridges. Even so often, we get some fairly weak revelations, but they're often something like Joe Stevenson may have a small penis, or Jay Haran got a BJ from a ring rat, or something like that. We're talking about dangerous and criminal behavior, or situations which are incredibly bizarre. They're hard to believe. I understand that you need to keep some details out of the book that you're potentially going to write, or some stuff that you're going to use in your book. But what's some of the craziest stuff that you've seen behind the scenes?
I mean, most of the places overseas have been really good. I mean, Japan was really good to me. I was over to South Korea. It's really nice over there. But, I mean, there's other third world countries where, you know, I mean, some people don't like how commission states are and how there's so much to go through, hoops to jump through here now that every state's commissioned here in the United States. But, you know, we got it really good. You go over to a country like Bulgaria when I fought over there, and you were talking about a country ran by a cocaine mafia. And I got off the plane. I had three escorts that carried satchels that had guns in them. And, I mean, that was nuts, the whole situation, the whole fight. I mean, they pay you what they want to pay you. Contracts mean nothing. I mean, they send you a contract to get you over there, but it means nothing. You get over there in a third world country where if you're fortunate enough to take a corner man, they'll fly one in with you. You speak none of their language, and they what they're saying and what they're doing. I've had some pretty crazy experiences, and I talked about the Bulgarian trip, and I was nuts.
I saw an interview with Phil Baroni where he accused some fighters of using loaded gloves in Japan, and that was incredibly shocking to me, and obviously very dangerous and unethical. Is that something you've ever observed?
So what's that?
Anybody using loaded gloves or dirty gloves overseas?
Loaded gloves? I don't know. I've never seen it, but I've heard it. I've heard that. But, I mean, you know, I mean, just something like I said, once again, I mean, there's no commission to come in and what you tape your hands and what you put in and what you do. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Fighters getting coked up before fights, loaded gloves. We've heard wild nights in Tokyo fleeing from the police and hiding out with Japanese hookers. All of this is more interesting than Joe Stevenson's penis. Okay, but do you have any fear of implicating anyone you know personally with this book? I mean, if stuff was going on, I'd assume you more directly know what the people you were associated with were doing.
I mean, facts, and you know, my book's about the lifetime and the crazy stories of my life. I mean, what every day it's a reality show, and I guarantee people are going to be intrigued. I know I was able to talk Mark in to recently coming on and doing an AMA with everybody, and he might have me beat. You hear some of his stories. He's lived as crazy as, if not more, than what I've done. So,
one fighter you talked about was Zach Jensen from the season of The Ultimate Fighter. He was apparently hired by a fairly wealthy person as a chaperone and bodyguard for a young lady on a trip to Mexico, and he had a scuffle or a fight with a younger male, and it was later claimed that the male was attacking the girl he was hired to protect, and the young man unfortunately died afterwards due to aspirating on his own vomit. And what a terrible situation it was. We've been following this. I saw you say in the underground that you heard that the victim was attacked by Jensen while being intimate in some way with the girl.
I'll tell you, and it was really crazy. You know, we all went into the house. I actually within the last 2 weeks, got on the Ultimate Fighter talking to the show, the cast on the show, and was able to get on the show. I didn't know who Jensen was when I met him, and I knew nothing about his background. He got picked on in the house because the very first thing that came out of his mouth was, "I'm going to win this show. No one's fought like I have." And, I mean, he was really talking himself up. He turned out to be a complete turd, which I'm not picking on him. I'm just telling you the facts. I mean, guy got choked out by damn near everybody in the house. And when the pressure got put on him, I mean, he crumbled. And yeah, once we got out of the house, it was brought to my attention. Hell, I didn't know about it in the house. He acted really distant and didn't say much. Said there's some things going on in his life. Well, when we were out of the house, I was in Chicago, and I was approached by CBS, Doug from CBS, doing a story on 48 Hours about the whole incident. Questioned me, told me the whole thing. Show me facts, show me papers. This guy literally had to go down to Mexico and was down there for weeks on end, talking to the hotel, talking to the police, interviewing people that were there that night. I mean, it was really, really crazy. And it's a shame. I mean, you know, a kid lost his life over it. What I'm told today is there was a civil suit that it was taken care of with the family, and it's been dropped. So there's been no charges of no wrongdoing, but, you know, I mean, money talks. And shame of it is a young kid lost his life.
Did he really say he was called a murderer?
What's that?
Did he really say he was, quote, a murderer? Because my understanding is that Jensen broke down in the house and you know, gave
details
of what happened.
He broke down in the house. I mean, one night it was really, really bad. And he just said, out of his mouth, which I didn't understand at the time, was he didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to do it. And sobbing and like, what the? And didn't know what he was talking about. But afterwards, tied things together. Once I started hearing the story, and I thought, huh, it makes sense. It kind of makes sense now on this occasion, things to be said. Had a diary that, I mean, was really, he had a journal that he carried with him that, I don't know, that thing would be interesting to read. Probably has people that he wants to take out before he goes, leaves his planet. my name's probably in there.
It's shocking. I mean, did he relate any details of the confrontation? I mean, did he slap a choke on this person and died?
No. But when talking to the CBS guy, I mean, that what their, the autopsies and their story is that he came in, the guy was on top of the girl, she was screaming, he grabs him, picks him up, rear naked choke, choking him, carries him in, throws him into the bathroom, pulls the door shut. And like I said, there's so many different stories. You have him saying to the police that he didn't touch the kid. The kid walked into the bathroom on his own accord. And I mean, there's just a lot of different stories.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Well, taking one angle, why do you think Jensen would potentially flip out like that if he indeed wasn't protecting the girl from an assault? I mean, could it have been jealousy, some sort of misguided protective urge?
He probably liked the girl. And I mean, she came from a lot of money. I mean, he might have liked her. Who knows? He definitely had a temper. I mean, did you see some of the outtakes in there where, like, I mean, me and McSweeney pulled the drawer open. He was in the bathroom. We pulled the drawer open so he couldn't get out of the bathroom door. Well, he was trying to, and damn near broke the door, or broke the handle on the drawer, trying to get out, told him to chill out, wait a second, close the drawer. As soon as he closed the drawer, we started walking by. He came out that door and attacked McSweeney, just ran at him throwing punches. And Sweeney kicked him, put him in a guillotine, and Zach tapped out and said, get out of my room. I mean, he was flipping out.
Yeah. And this is an awful situation, like I said. And,
this is with heavyweights. Now, imagine a guy who's 6, I don't know what Zach is, 6'2 to 6'4, somewhere there, weighing 270, probably 280 at the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really
is
weird.
It fair?
Like I said, what's that?
Is it fair to say that Wes Sims solved the Zach Jensen case? Would that be an overreach or not?
If what?
If Wes Sims solved the Zach Jensen case, do you think that's an overreach or do you think that's a fair statement?
I guess I still don't understand the question.
Wes, do you feel that you solved or helped to solve the Zach Jensen case? Like, do you feel that
I didn't solve no case. I'm just finding facts myself and just looking into it. I mean, because, you know, I mean, it's something that's, wow, I mean, it's really kind of shocking. I mean, this dude was sleeping above me for 6 weeks.
Yeah. What other stuff happened that we might not have seen? I mean, is there anything else that you could relate to the audience that maybe wasn't revealed on the show?
Well, on a lighter side, if you want a good laugh, I upper deck everybody in the other bedroom over. I upper decked them, I took the top off their toilet and took a dump in the top of their toilet. So every time they flushed, instead of clean water, you had poo water coming in.
Yeah.
It's true.
And what would happen? I mean, if he tried to ambush you, or didn't he try to attack you in some way?
Did you not see practice, Bob? It made television when I choked him unconscious in a triangle, and it actually happened twice. I don't know if the second time made it, but the one I choked him unconscious in a triangle twice in practice.
And that was because I didn't see that was.
I think
basically,
I don't know. Jensen wasn't, or he's unique individual.
How would Wes Sims handle the role of female protector and confidant in a situation like that, like Zach was in?
Depends on the female.
Would Wes Sims assassinate someone for money? Let's say a lot of money.
Would I what?
Would you assassinate
someone for a lot of money? Assassinate someone for a lot of money? Oh, my God. I don't know if I can answer that. I mean, why? Are you offering?
No. What about
no,
before, though?
No.
I know you harbor deep
that?
Resentments. You harbor deep resentments against Tim Sylvia, who, in my mind, only beat you due to a freak injury. I've seen you say that you'd beat Sylvia down in public if you got the chance.
I would love nothing more but a fight with him. A fresh, clean fight, not 2 weeks after I blow my elbow out and then say, hey, look, you want to come back over to Hawaii and stay here for another 2 weeks? I fought him, right? I fought November 16th. I just fought Anthony Hardonk, and I tore my elbow. I had to have cadaver put in, like Tommy John surgery. I had to have that done on my elbow. Literally, 2 weeks later, I fought Tim Sylvia. Had it all taped up, wrapped up, and man, the thing was just killing me. You know, I should have never took the fight. It's right there at Christmas time. It's one of those where, need for money was more than need for winning, and I regret that.
Is Big Tim one of the people you've encountered who you dislike the most in life?
No, I don't dislike him the most in life. I just, you know, me and Tim's never seen things eye to eye, and we're the same height. I mean, he should be. If he can't see things my way, well, then we've got a problem.
Yeah. Who would be part of the top three enemies of Wes Sims? What about Ken Pavia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pavia probably ranks number two. You have Big Tim at number three. You have Pavia at number two. And Pavia, definitely, I'm sure before, and I'll say it on here just like I wrote it on the interview, I am sure I'm going to have to go in front of a judge and defend myself. When they ask me, why did you beat this guy half to death, or why did you wedgie him? Because when I see him, I'm going to reach down in his pants. I'm going to grab a hold of his little T-bar thong that I'm sure he wears, and I'm going to pull it up out of his pants so hard, it's probably going to rip his butt crack an inch up his back, cause a lot of bleeding.
You said that he was part of setting you up in an unfair fight in a promotion with connections to the European drug trade.
That was the whole fight in Bulgaria, Bob. I mean, shit, he was managing my opponent. My opponent, I go over there with the intention of, you know, Ken booked the fight. I'm thinking Ken's on my team at least and going to corner me at least, because he's the only American over there when it comes down to fight week. And, oh, he tells me he can't corner me, and then I catch him at weigh-ins texting Remy from Bellator on behalf of my opponent. I've got an email, and that's where me and Pavia really going to clash heads when I see him. I got the email where he screwed up, and it was one of these where he was just replying. So I have where he accidentally sends his conversation with the Bulgarians telling them to stiff me out of my money. Put a gun to my head and freaking stiff me out of my money.
Yeah, he allegedly forgot to remove quoted correspondence instructing the promoter to stiff you and even try to threaten your life.
Oh, me and Pavia, we'll cross paths.
Yeah. What's your opinion of Pavia on a personal level? What sort of man is he?
He's the lowest scumbag, leech. Every fighter, I mean, there's guys that say that he's done things for their family. Well, prove it. I mean, if you were 0-15, maybe he got you a few fights and got you paid. But I'm telling you, the majority that has had experiences with Ken Pavia have had bad experiences. He's trying to sue the UFC, trying to do things that are just ridiculous, and the guy really just needs his ass kicked.
What do you have to say about Blackula? Mike Kyle, the vampire.
A vampire. I can't, you know, even after all that, he's not on my top three list. So, you know, I've seen where Kyle, I think he was early on in his career, and he has taken things into reflection. And, you know, I mean, I think he's bettered himself. He's got a big fight coming up, I guess. And he's fighting Anthony Johnson.
World Series of Fighting, yeah.
Yeah. So, I got no reason to hate the guy. I would bite him if we ever fought again. I'd get him back. I'd probably take an ear or something, just like Mike Tyson did.
What's the difference between Kyle's bite and your stomps on Mir, other than bacterial levels, of course?
Well, I mean, there was... He bit me because he was getting submitted. He couldn't breathe, and he says that. He says he was choking me. Well, that's not a really good reason. That's in the rules. You tap out. If you can't breathe, you tap out. You don't bite the guy. Mir, I stomped him. I got no reason for it. I mean, besides the fact that when we were on the ground, guy accidentally poked me in the eyes, and when he did that, I just said, when I get up, he's going to pay. And I flipped the switch. Pride rules.
Did it feel good to stomp him on his pretty young
with
face
that?
Before he got too much? Did it feel good to stomp him?
Well, you know, I mean, it's only up till recent where he started to get his warrior spirit back. I mean, I know he might blame a motorcycle wreck, but I know it wasn't that. It was the stomps that did a ton of damage to him, physically and mentally. Took his warrior spirit.
Yeah, that was, as you mentioned earlier, that was really a classic fight. I mean, that I think before the Lesnar fight, your bouts against Mia really put both of you over with the fans in a way that can't be diminished.
Well, like I said to you and everybody, I would love at current day one last shot. And I know he's gotten better, but I feel bigger and stronger, and I know I have too. I think I'd love to have just one more fight with me and Frank.
I know that UFC Hall of Famer Mark Coleman and you are still very good friends, and Coleman has been a mentor to you throughout your time in the sport. Can you talk a little about the basis for that friendship and how it stayed strong over the years?
I mean, you know, I owe the guy. He got me into the sport, and I'm not one of these gym rats that jump around, that jumps from gym to gym to gym and praises a coach this week and then next week tells you he's a piece of shit and jumps to the next one. I've never been like that. I've been offered a lot of opportunities to go train at other places, and I probably should have taken them and went and trained at other places and got that knowledge and gotten better. But you know something? I felt loyal. You can call it what it is, but you call it whatever you want. But in fact, I'm loyal. I was raised. I appreciate what he's done for me. And he's never, I mean, Mark's never said no. I mean, anything I've ever asked him help or anything, he's always been there. So I owe it to him, and I've been there for him. And not even now, you know, I mean, it's his career is on the down side now. And, you know, I mean, I've tried to talk to him and you know, tell him, keep his spirits high and tell him, hey, look, you know, I mean, you got this hip, you got this new hip, and, you know, you can work out, keep your body in shape. Because he hasn't gotten fat and gotten out of shape. I mean, he could get in shape. And personally, I mean, I don't know if it's possible, but I told him, I said, I'd like to see you do one more. Because, you know, I know that last fight with Couture didn't sit well with him. It was really, it bothers him and it put him in a bad funk.
You know, I remember during the Smashing Machine documentary, they showed Coleman, how Coleman was having a difficult time financially. And, you know, you wonder, you see certain guys retire from the sport and do pretty well, and then other guys, you know, they may not be doing as well. I wonder, how is Mark doing financially?
He's not doing very well. I mean, it's been really rough. I mean, here when he had that surgery, MMA Elite at least kept their insurance and took care of that. I mean, Mark's, besides his last fight with Couture, I mean, he's lived on his appearances. He makes an appearance here and there, and his main sponsor, which was the MMA Elite, let him go. So that really hurt. I mean, it was a substantial amount. It was coming in monthly. He was doing the appearances for him, doing the things that they wanted, but they just said they had to go a different direction. They were going with young blood, and they let him go. And it'd be great if you could find another sponsor, someone that wants a UFC Hall of Fame or someone that wants. I mean, this guy, you remember 96 when he started, people talked about him like there was no stopping that guy.
Yeah.
Don Fry said if he ever had to walk through hell, he'd want a bucket of water on one hand, Mark Coleman on the other side.
Yeah. And it's really a shame to see someone who has so much prominence in our sport struggle. I almost feel that it's the responsibility of even organizations like the UFC to try to offer some sort of opportunities. I mean, I don't know, you know, what Mark's relationship is with the UFC, but
to our knowledge, I mean, we didn't leave on bad terms, and we go out to fan expos and we do things. At one point, they were getting ready to make replicas of his Pride belt and his UFC 12, UFC 10 belt, and they couldn't get him over to China. They didn't want to take him over by hand to get replicas made. But I think, I mean, between that and if they would put together a deal where he could write his book, oh my God, they'd sell billion copies. I really wish they'd do something with him, keep him some kind of job, even if he's just the storyteller, because there ain't nobody can tell a story like Mark Coleman.
Yeah, even someone who's probably worse financial shape is Mark Kerr. I mean, the last I heard, Mark Kerr was selling cars. He's working for Toyota or something like that in Arizona. But I don't know. I haven't heard anything from Mark. I interviewed him a few years ago, but I would be anxious to see how he's doing too.
Yeah, I don't know about Kerr. I don't know.
I
hate to cut it short, but man, I got
Okay,
I'm right in the middle of taking a car right now. So.
All right. Well, let's just give people any website information and anything that you want people to know to, you know, look up what's going on with you.
Well, I ain't got a website up right now. Hit me up on my Facebook, West Sims MMA. Just want to thank all my sponsors. I mean, the ones that are helping me out right now, Lancaster Bingo, Precise Automotive, Reliable Auto Sales, R&L Upholstery. I mean, these guys are helping me get ready for this fight, and just looking forward to coming back, showing the new fans.
When is your fight taking place, and who are you fighting?
September 1st. Fighting in, out in California, Gladiator Challenge, fighting Warpath.
Oh, wow. That's going to be a barn burner.
Yep. First one back.
Yep. That's going to be a very, very good fight. So, well, listen, Wes, thanks a lot for coming on the program and always giving us your honest take on everything. We really appreciate it. And good luck September 1st, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Bob. You take care, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Wes Sims here on Carson's Corner. We're going to take a brief time out. When we come back, we'll probably go into the Dan Quinn update. So keep it right here on Carson's Corner.
Get over here!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, it's August 5th, 1050. My name is Bob Carson, and I'm with Dan Quinn. It's been a while since we spoke to Dan. Dan, how the hell are you, my friend?
Well, you know what? Doing as well as can be expected. I'm not homeless. I'm not hungry, okay? I'm a political prisoner. And I'll tell you what, Bob, it's kind of late in the game, you know? I mean, I don't know if you've been reading Rolling Stone magazine or any of the issues out there that say that the planet is basically taking a nosedive, okay? The recent global warming issue says that basically all the ice and ice has melted away, okay? And if it's late in the game, I need a home run, a proverbial home run, Bob, okay? I need somebody like Cedric Figro, okay? I played football with him in Notre Dame. He played football with the Chargers and a couple other teams for like 8 years, okay? He's a high school football coach in Louisiana now. What I need is for somebody like Cedric Figro to not only get on a pound of stevia a month, but to help me contact people, okay, that can potentially make a difference. And I'll tell you what, Bob, I was reading Rolling Stone magazine, and you know what they said about Miley Cyrus? They said Miley Cyrus was a saliva-scented fuckery. Did you get that? A saliva-scented fuckery. And when I read that shit, I was like, you know what? She's my fucking metaphorical hero, along with Lindsay Lohan, okay? And I swear to God, I would implore everybody out there to call 1-800-SILENT-UNITY, okay? That's, oh, no, no, no. It's call Silent Unity at 1-800-PRAY-NOW. That's 1-800-PRAY-NOW. To have Miley Cyrus, perhaps even Lindsay Lohan, to have somebody play the violin on their pussy, okay? Treating the G-spot like it's the yin and the yang, okay? Pressing on both dots, massaging, okay? And then clitoral stimulation. Joe H. U. in Worcester, Massachusetts. Hello, Joe and crew. You guys renamed it the Levitator, Bob, because pelvises literally come off the bed to attack faces. Have you ever in your life heard of a oral trick that will take a woman to 100 orgasms, Bob?
No.
Okay, that's the violin, and the fact that it hasn't gone gangbusters in a fluoride-induced coma in the United States, okay, that's sad, all right? Yeah, that would potentially help me take stevia globally famous, okay, Nobel Prize and save millions of lives. Bob, Priscilla Vassallo is the ex-girlfriend of Mad Mike Gonzalez from Team Carnage, okay? I want everybody to call Silent Unity at 1-800-PRAY-NOW for them to pray for Priscilla to actually wake up the stevia again, okay? It went quickly from fantastic news, man. Priscilla's stage 4 cancer is gone, all right? To Priscilla's kind of ho-hum, you know, thanks for the stevia. I used it in conjunction with my chemotherapy. And now, Bob, she's stage 4 cancer. It's all over her body and brain. She's in a hospital bed, and she's going to go to heaven. When the tragedy of this, okay, if that happens, all she has to do is use stevia, and she'll come back 100% and help me take this globally famous, all right? Now, fact not fiction, Cedric Figro, okay? If I am at USC making a play, Bob, I'm probably on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I'm going to the NFL. Everybody in America knows my name, Bob Carson. If I can catch Tim Brown from behind, okay, and I can cover NFL millionaire black speedsters man-to-man and shut them down, okay, if I play football, does everybody in football America know Dan Quinn's name?
For sure, right? Without a doubt.
Okay, without a doubt, okay? Now, there's a story there to Jack Del Rio and to Troy Palomino, all right? If I go to USC, which I wanted to do, all right, except fucking, oh, man, I'm drawing the blank right now. I didn't write his name down. Okay, anyway, Troy Palomino, okay, and Arenga, that's his investment company, and Fruitvale Station. You ever heard of that movie, Fruitvale Station, Bob?
No.
Okay, well, it's about that kid getting killed by the BART officers in San Francisco, all right? And it's directed, and a guy stars in it. His name is Ryan Coogler. He goes to USC Film School, where I wanted to go, okay? Gentlemen, if I went to USC and was wearing cardinal gold when I make the play, if I'm not fucking diverted to Notre Dame and subject to curse, I'm going to cover Sports Illustrated on primetime, Deion Sanders. And in fact, I don't know if you could, what do you think? Do you think Deion Sanders could catch Tim Brown from behind if Tim Brown was gone for a touchdown?
No.
Like I did? Okay. You know what? I did. You know what I'm saying? And in fact, that would be a white boy. And you know how people are fucking dying, okay, to have a white savage Lawrence Taylor / Dick Butkus in the NFL? I mean, they would eat that shit up, don't you think, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. to Nebraska Cornhusker football, okay? And especially to Team Jack and little 7-year-old Jack Hoffman, okay? He's suffering from brain cancer, Bob, just like Lenny Dykstra is. Did you know that there's a cancer cluster in Philadelphia? As a matter of fact, that two Phillies have died from brain cancer, and Lenny Dykstra is actually dying from brain cancer, okay? Straight up, you know? Now, this old Jack Hoffman, he's 7 years old, and Nebraska had a big thing, you know, free game. They actually let him run for a touchdown. It brought tears to my eyes, man. A 7-year-old kid. You realize, in your 60s and shit, you have cancer.
Yeah.
Get the fuck. You've already lived part of your life and shit. But a little 7-year-old boy, there's too many kids around the country, all right, that are dying of cancer, and it's getting worse. And all they have to do is drink sweet stevia water, okay? Preferably pure H2O. They're going 100% healthy, all right? Now, Bob, Rolling Stone magazine, I think, is the most progressive magazine out there now. And they called John Icebox. Wait a minute, let me see. They called John the Icebox Maverick. No. It's Jason Box. Hold on. Jason Box is the Ice Maverick, okay? And this goes to Rutgers Atmospheric Scientist Jennifer Francis, Penn State's Earth System Science Center, Michael Mann, and James Hansen, who's called the godfather of global warming, Bob. Okay, my question to all these learned people out there, do they have any idea, okay, on the difference between oil and hydrogen in powering internal combustion engines? That question, Bob Carson, do you think, before when I started talking to you, okay, and we're drilling for oil in the Middle East and everything, did you think it was the oil that was coming out of the ground that actually powered cars like most people do?
When I was a little bit more uneducated, yeah, sure.
Most people think it's actually that brown petroleum, okay, that's littering and decimating and toxifying this planet that actually provides power. What it does is it explodes water into power, it banishes it from a liquid into a smoke at the back end, and it's toxifying this planet. And then again, I brought this up before, Bob. I mean, doesn't it make sense that if there's a fire at the center of the Earth's core, it makes sense that there has to be some kind of fuel delivery system to keep that going, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I would bet my life, I don't know about you, that the petroleum that we're sucking out of the fucking Earth's core to power internal combustion engines, I say that is a fuel delivery system right there, and we're hasting the death of this planet by using petroleum. What do you think, Bob?
Don't even get me started on this, Dan. I completely agree about this. We've already reached peak oil. We've already thoroughly explored the planet for this type of energy, and unfortunately, it's very, very disgusting. It's very inefficient, and it's killing us.
What it does, it centralizes the power source in the hands of a few people who are greedy rich. They are willing to sell the longevity and the health of this planet to make themselves basically gods, okay? In fact, I'll finish it, okay? The United States and global economy is basically a garden, okay? And instead of water for plants, money is used to water and make things grow, all right? And you cannot have a thriving garden if you have all the water in big depositories like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett's billion-dollar bank account. It's not working, okay? They could actually take half of their fortune, okay? They could take half their fortune and start companies, and even if they lose money, they can write that shit off on their taxes, and that's exactly the same thing that Franklin Delano Roosevelt did, okay, prime the pot before World War II. They got this economy on its feet, okay? And we can, God forbid, okay? Let me rephrase that, okay? I pray that we don't have to go to war to stimulate the economy, okay? Now, this is to all weed drivers out there, to Seth Rogen, and to Willie Nelson, and to Woody Harrelson, and when I'm mentioning these names, this is the people like Joe Ichu, and even the fucking punk Steve Stevia, okay, that make calls to people that are mentioning and say, hey, listen, you know what? You might want to take a look at Stevia, okay? Like the Colorado's Gaia, and to Big Wheat Sanders, and the owner of Gaia, his name is Andrew Boyas, and Philip Hogg, and Wright Pritchard, okay? That's not fishing. Three teaspoons of the pants.
You there?
That, and you can start taking 30 to 40 to 50 to 60 hits of the bomb hash, okay? It feels like you're in a euphoria. It's the same feeling I had when I hit Mama's pool and they had a broken collarbone. Huh? And you know what? It's actually a healthy, nut-like feeling, okay? And it gives you brilliant thoughts. It banishes pain, along with cancer, obesity, and also diabetes, okay? And it's going to change global history. It just didn't know it's listening, all right? Now, Bob, real quick, I actually wrote a letter to the Sacramento Bee, and it's about conditions here at Sacramento County Jail. And it goes like this, letters. Sleep deprivation and starvation, quote-unquote, policies at Sacramento County's main jail, or, quote-unquote, sex offenders slapped on pedophile wrists while nonviolent substance abusers, a.k.a. addicts, are sentenced to non-mandatory maximums, or why does jail trash can copious amounts of taxpayer-funded soup and foods with how many homeless and hungry, plus defendants pleading out, okay, to go to prisons and larger non-starvation portions? Huh. All right. Where to begin? Fact. Daniel Biagi pled out early two and four prisons' larger food trays. Deputies routinely hit sleeping eyes with flashlight beams, even though Bradley Manning's judges ruled it torture. A Kaiser sex-offending pedophilic psychiatrist actually gets 1 year in county jail, Bob, and 5 years probation. But Charlie Booth, the friend that I met in here, he gets absolutely washed for the rest of his fucking life for over an ounce of dope, okay? An ounce of meth, okay? And extra food trays and soups and sandwiches are trashed daily, yet the cops inflate ramen noodles 500% plus when sold for a dollar, all right? Fact, our criminal quote-unquote justice system should take gold at the oxymoron Olympics. Did I say that right? Should take gold at the oxymoron Olympics for lack thereof. But injustices versus those supposedly innocent before proven guilty are covered by their quote-unquote criminal disclaimer. All right, you get that? The criminal justice system, it is criminal. There is no justice in it. And that's signed Daniel Quinn. Now I say, the above is true, meets 150 max work, okay? It comes from a future Nobel Prize winner, Nobel laureate, for discovering stevia not only kicks cocaine's ass in the stimulant Olympics, but also cures cancer and obesity and diabetes after 2 pounds of stevia over 4 months, quote unquote, vanished, 6 breast tumors, and 62 pounds of fat and type 2 diabetes from my Uncle Bob Johnson in Carmichael, California. Can you imagine the billions and even trillions that the AMA and doctors and Big Pharma are going to lose?
1 minute remaining.
Okay, for 1 minute remaining, I'm going to call you right back, Bob, all right?
You got it.
Okay, as a stevia in comparatively massive doses proves out to be the cure for the human body, perhaps why my stevia cures videos on YouTube equal me getting frequent to constant death threat telephone calls, okay? The same voice is threatening to rape and murder my kids, and also quote-unquote terrorist threatening, boxing's Don King, football coach Skip Holtz at the University of South Florida, and the UFC's Dana White. Seriously. See TMZ globally slandering Dan Quinn when it's obviously not my voice on that tape, okay, that murder, death, kill, threatens Dana White, Dr. Evil's wife. See Sacramento police and sheriffs raiding my houses 4 times after those terrorist threat calls to above Memphis list. Quote unquote, see me in 1991 tell a Miami cop, quote unquote, your mom and dad should have been sterilized to prevent the lump of genetic shit wearing a badge in front of me, okay? See him Rodney King and attack me and hurt me and then try to cover.
Thank you for using IC Solutions. Recorded and subject to monitoring at any time. Thank you for using IC Solutions. You may begin speaking now.
Bob Carson, fantastic. I will resume where I left off, okay? Me getting constant death threat telephone calls and the same voices threatening to rape and murder my kids. And also, quote-unquote, terrorist threatening boxing's Don King and football coach Skip Holtz of the University of South Florida and the UFC's Dana White. Seriously, see TMZ globally slandering Dan Quinn, but obviously not my voice on that tape, that murder, death, kill threatens Dana, Dr. Evil's life. See Sacramento police and sheriffs raiding my house 4 times after those terrorist threat calls to the above mentioned celebs. Quote-unquote, see me in 1991 tell a Miami cop, quote unquote, your mom and dad should have been sterilized to prevent the lump of genetic shit wearing a badge in front of me. See him Rodney King attack and hurt me, and then try to cover his ass by charging me with a BS never happened attempted murder on a cop. That is that was immediately reduced to a misdemeanor trust theft that I pled to, quote-unquote, seize that PS never happened, attempted murder versus a cop charge, perpetually stay on my unofficial record, and continually equal cops and sheriffs losing their fucking minds into violating my civil rights, and this time equaling an injury requiring surgery. Consider the quote-unquote Hunger Games popularity and imagine it an actual parody of America's world. And then imagine my Stevie discovery significance if it actually does kick cocaine's ass as a stimulant, which you can easily prove with a 25 cent purchase at the Natural Foods Co-op on a Hammer Boulevard. And then imagine the red-faced embarrassment and perhaps even terminations and firings after I tell Sac County's nasty truth from the quote-unquote soapbox discovering the cure delivers. I bet you don't publish my letter. I bet that me believing your quote-unquote right-wing rag equals future words from my lips having the same effect for Sac Animal B as for the police and Scott Jones' jail. Thank you very much, Dan Quinn. Seriously, have you gotten the stevia? Has Riley sent it to you yet?
No, he hasn't.
Okay. Do you have Riley's cell phone number?
Yeah, I can get in touch with him again.
Okay, get in touch with him, have him send it out, all right? And this is like, we're in the fourth quarter, brother, okay? We're in the late innings of a world championship baseball game, okay? And the score is against the earth. We need a metaphorical home run, you know? If I play football, everybody in fucking football America knows me, okay? You know Jack Del Rio is, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, do you think that if Jack Del Rio discovered that stevia actually kicks the shit out of cocaine as a stimulant, and molasses used in your body, it vanishes cancer and tumors and fat diabetes, if he came out with this discovery, do you think that everybody in football America would listen?
Yes.
Okay, bottom line. I would imagine that Cedric Figaro, okay, did I say that correctly? Cedric Figaro, big, I bet you're big as a house, homeboy, okay? He was the most talented athlete that I'd ever seen in linebacker, Bob. He was lazy as fuck because he didn't have to try, okay? He would come in like a beast whale and then play himself into shape, all right? Chances are that he's carrying a little bit too much weight in Louisiana. If he puts a pound of stevia into his body each and every month, Bob, based on his... what happened to your body, what's going to happen to Cedric Figaro?
He's going to shrink down.
He's going to slim down, okay? If he keeps using it, he's going to go to lean and borderline ribs. Yes?
Yep.
Okay, that's what I need. I need for everybody listening here to perhaps get in touch with Cedric Figaro, perhaps get in touch with Frank Stamps, okay? Like I said before, was it Frank's fault that Holt hated me, that Holt kicked me off the team before spring practice so Frank could actually... get his feet wet in that job, okay, that's my linebacker, all right? Bottom line, if Marty Lippincott, Lip, are you listening? All right, somebody contact Marty Lippincott in Philadelphia somewhere. I think I heard that he was working at the Playboy Club, all right, as a bouncer. If Marty Lippincott is that nose tackle, Dan Quinn is that weak side linebacker, Cedric Figaro is that strong side outside linebacker, and Frank Stamps can choose whatever inside linebacker position he wants, we're the most dominant fucking football in college football history, okay? I mean, no one comes close. And people talk about us in legend, all right? Just like Will Smith. Do you think that would have made some waves, Bob, if we were the most dominant college defensive football team in the history of the game?
Without a doubt.
There you go, okay? Now, Bob, have you ever heard of anybody at linebacker, black or white, covering millionaire speedsters man-to-man and shutting him down?
No.
Okay, have you ever heard of anybody graduating high school and not going to a pro sports team, and then 10 to 12 years after they attend that high school, they're still telling Danny Quinn fucking war stories because I'm a goddamn legend at San Diego High School?
Absolutely.
Have you ever heard of anything like that?
No.
You there, Bob?
Yep.
Okay, you know, have you ever heard of Frank Dukes knocking five guys out at once? Okay. Now, Frank Dukes might have knocked five guys out in the Kumite when he's out there because he's a bad motherfucker, okay? But have you ever heard of anybody getting attacked by four guys and then, well, it wasn't five at once, okay? It was four and then one. Have you ever heard of anybody knocking out five people like that?
No, it's unbelievable.
Okay, well, you know what? Bob, please, make an effort to contact Boogaloo, a.k.a. Mark Pagal, all right? and he's the artist that drew the Bad Boy Club. And don't you think it looks a little like me?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. And I'll put my hand on a Bible. I'll swear on my life, okay? I don't want to throw anybody off that is important to me. That, Boogaloo, you admitted to me that I was your inspiration, okay? Back then, Bob, there was a thing about jocks versus surfers, okay? When surfers are actually fucking jocks, they just don't want to go through the bullshit and listen to all the, okay, bottom line, Craig Bell, I love you. You're a great coach. You shouldn't have let John Cannon be a monster. Ed Wiley, if every coach was like you, I don't quit football, and I continue. Ed Wiley is getting old. If he did a pound a month, he's living to 100, okay? And he can help me enjoy my stevia earning a Nobel Prize after it happens. But there was this jock versus surfer conflict, this mentality when I was in high school, okay? And I think part of the reason was because I was shy, I was insecure, I thought I was ugly, I thought I had a fucking tiny dick, all right? And I saw the surfers, and they were fucking cool, and they all had badass girlfriends. And then Sean Nevitt, who actually went to USC, sucker punched me at an 8th grade dance when he was in 7th grade, Bob. And I'll tell you what, didn't knock me out, and I blew him up to the point where they had to put a pan underneath his nose because it was like a faucet to the principal's office. But that shouldn't have happened. We should have been friends, all right? And Sean Nevitt went to USC, all right? He was a Trojan, just like I wanted to be my entire life. Always wanted to be one, never wanted to wear one. His brother, Richie, actually committed suicide, which is a tragedy because I like Richie, okay? Everybody that knew that I knew did. What's a bigger tragedy in the scope of the loss of human life, Bob, is me not wearing cardinal gold when I make the play. Because if I did, everybody in America knows my name, and Stevie is saving millions of lives, and fat and obesity and diabetes are a thing of the past. And you know what, Bob? This is how I honestly feel. I love my two boys so fucking much, all right, that I would literally, if I could go back in time, okay, just like in a movie, if I was put back in time before I even had them, I wouldn't play football, I wouldn't do anything different, and I would miss them desperately until the day that hopefully I could actually get her mom that she would have me again. You feel me? All right? That's why men should not be in charge, all right? Do you know of any group of guys that, if they don't know each other, can get along? Do you know anybody like that?
Not really, no.
No, guys can't do it, okay? You put male dogs together, they're going to fight. It's a fact, not fiction. Prisons in California are gladiator fucking schools. Seriously, okay? People are getting stabbed left and right. The guards are not being held accountable. They're actually putting enemies out on the yard at the same time. We heard about it at Corcoran, okay? Did you know that females in prison, they don't politic, they don't have the fucking problems that men do? Did you have any idea about that?
I kind of figured that, yeah.
Well, you know what? It took me by surprise, Bob, but it proves the point. Men were not fucking made to run things. Lindsay Lohan and Miss Miley Cyrus and Julie Roberts and Sandra Bullock and all these beautiful women that I've seen on the screen before, and I thought, huh, you know what? I would definitely love to put my mouth on their vaginas and play the violin. Two fingers pairing up to the bottom of the G-spot and rubbing the belly, Bob, okay? You've eaten pussy before, correct?
Yes.
Okay, have you ever heard of anybody rubbing the belly when giving fellatio?
No.
Okay, rubbing the belly at the same time, it's like playing the violin, okay? Your fingers actually feel each other. That's why I call the violin back and forth with clitoral stimulation. If orgasms were like the 4th of July and fireworks, Bob, it's like the 4th of July going berserk, okay, all over the globe, all right, if you're looking, from outer space, in a good way. There's no deaths, and women are repaid for all the fucking bullshit that they have to put up with men, all right? That's not fiction. We weren't meant to rule, all right? And we're the only animal species on this planet that is governed by men, all right? And what is it taking, Bob? A little over 2,000 years for us to actually run this planet into a brick wall like Dale Earnhardt. But it's about that time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's not much time left, okay? Fact, not fiction, to everybody that is listening and to everybody that I mentioned. About 6 years ago, I discovered that stevia splits water to a natural gas, that exquisitely fine blonde PhD in rose. Oh my God, that's a gas. That's what H2O, okay? I was getting about 75% water back out of a 5 gallon tank, okay, of water bottle. Now it's even worse, but when I got locked up, it was close to 50%, all right? Background fiction, have you heard about Al Gore's predictions that it's going to be almost like biblical catastrophe because of global warming?
Yes.
Okay, that's true. If we didn't have billions of internal combustion engines around the planet banishing liquid hydrogen, okay, into smog, all right? Now, there might be an even return, Bob, okay? I don't know, you know, the gallons of water, the all the fucking smog and bad shit in the air. That, have you heard this, Bob? That if we actually turned off every internal combustion engine, that the glare from the sun would be so severe, okay? Because that's actually taken the place, it's replaced ozone, okay? And it's actually blocking stuff that would harm, if not kill, many plants and many people. You heard that?
Yes.
Okay, we're fucking shit up, man, okay? And X, this is the only home we have, okay? If God gives life, planet Earth is God, all right? In fact, you know, to all the Catholics out there, some of the best people that I've ever met in my life, okay, along with Mormons, along with everybody that I meet, good people, okay? But why would the Bible lie, all right? Don't you think, in my interpretation, Bob, that God actually lies to Eve? Don't you agree with me?
Yes.
Okay, you know, do you want to follow a God that's going to be as vicious and as militaristic as the God in the Bible, okay? Tells Eve that she's going to die if she eats her knowledge. If my wife is my partner, okay, not my helper, all right, not like a slave, all right, it's her right to have knowledge. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Okay, so if God tells Eve that she's going to die and she eats it, what could be the meaning, okay, or the reason for her actually eating the fruit of knowledge? Do you think that plausibly that my interpretation might be correct, that Eve was actually committing glorious hotty-totty, considering that there's women in the Middle East right now who are burning themselves to death because they're forced to marry men, okay, that they don't want?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically marrying women off to men that they can't stand, that are forced to have sex. It's basically like legalized rape, okay? I'm saying that if there was any sanity on planet Earth, we wouldn't have Bill Gates getting $50 billion to the United Nations, so all his little friends and their fucking business suits can be like a shark, you know, taking bites out of that $50 billion, okay? So by the time it gets to the streets, we're talking peanuts and nothing, okay? You know, what we would be doing is having the United Nations going...
1 minute remaining,
Bob, okay? How do you think I did?
You were excellent tonight, Dan.
Okay, fantastic. A lot of coffee, a lot of energy, and back. Red Bull and energy drinks like that are poison. Stevia puts, kind of like this, Bob. I told you before, I could go 5 days without a shower and not stink when I'm drinking pure H2O, right?
Right.
Okay. Stevia crashes all these unnecessary businesses that are polluting and killing this planet, okay? There's enough money to go around. There's enough money, Bob, that they can actually retire 90% of the workforce, okay? They, meaning the rich people, retire them. So they don't harm this planet, they live out their lives, and they don't overpopulate and, like, troubles with tribbles, you know, overpopulation to kill this planet. Is that true or false?
Absolutely true.
Absolutely true. Okay, there's enough money to go around, and it's my vision to actually spread it around from the billion.
Thank you for using IC Solutions.